You can have all the Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio podcast with our new app. Just search your app store, Apple, Android, Kindle. We don't care what you use. Search the app store for Explorations Early Learning. Download the app. Give it a try.
Welcome to Q&A with TNK. They've surfed the interwebs. They've contemplated, ruminated, and speculated. They've checked the teletype, and now they're ready to answer your questions. Here are your hosts, Tiffany and Kristen.
Hello, and welcome to Q&A.
With TNK, I'm Kristen.
And I'm Tiffany, and we have a special guest with us today.
Her name is Rachel. And Rachel, we were wondering how you pronounce your last name because we didn't want to butcher it.
It's Larimore.
That's what we thought. But so Rachel Larimore is with us today, and we're super excited to have her on. I have known about Rachel, well, since I started my nature-based program a few years ago because I had her book. She has a book called Establishing a Nature-Based Preschool. And I actually read that after I had kind of already gone into the whole process. So a lot of it was just really good validation.
Well, that's good. It was validation.
Totally. So we just want to know about you. We want to know your background. We want to know all about you. So we just want you to talk and tell the listeners just your professional background.
Okay. Well, let's see. May 22nd, 19... No, just kidding. I will not go that far back. The scoop on me. So currently I'm the education director at the Chippewa Nature Center in Midland, Michigan.
Okay.
So we're about halfway up the lower peninsula near Saginaw Bay City, on the Lake Huron side of the state. And we started in 2007 a nature-based preschool. And so that's sort of how the book and things came about. The backstory on how all of that came to be is a little bit more complicated and not really a direct route. I am from Illinois originally, grew up in a very outdoorsy family, lots of biologists, and grew up on a vegetable farm. And, you know, that was just my childhood. It was definitely nature filled. So I filled the you know, research path that way, the typical path. And then went to Colorado State in natural resource recreation and tourism. And I really knew I wanted to teach environmental education. I just didn't know you could get a degree in it. And then I ended up there and found that degree program. And so my degree is the concentration is interpretation. So then moved to Michigan, and I'd done some seasonal work in Michigan and worked at the Kalamazoo Nature Center, which happens to have Nature's Way Preschool. So that was the third nature-based preschool in the country. And they started, that program started in the late 70s, early 80s.
Crazy.
The dates all kind of blur together for me on that. So there was New Canaan in Connecticut, and then Arcadia National Audubon Society, rather, preschool, and then Kalamazoo Nature Center's program.
Oh, wow.
So I knew about the preschool, but the funny thing is that my staff think is really hilarious is preschool age, early childhood, was not my age at all.
Mm-hmm.
I was much more comfortable with upper elementary. You know, as typical, I was one of those that was scared of the little ones, like blurting out random facts about their grandma and aunt, and you know, those kinds of things.
Yes,
I've since learned a lot more about that, and now it's just great fun, of course. So at Kalamazoo, I thought, well, this is an interesting program model, and you know, was intrigued by it, and then moved to Chippewa in 2001. And about 2006 or so, so after I was here about 5 years, we were talking about expanding our visitor center. And about that same time, the nature center world was really talking a lot about preschools and nature-based preschools, because Kalamazoo, obviously, and New Canaan And then Dodge Nature Preschool in St. Paul had started in the early 2000s.
Okay.
Schlitz Audubon Center started in 2003, I believe. So there were these nature centers that were part of this professional association, the Association of Nature Center Administrators, ANCA. And so there was lots of conversation within administrators of nature centers saying, this is an interesting model. Seems to really fit our mission, which is ultimately to, you know, have a populace that cares about the natural world. And they also are self-sustaining, which for a lot of nature center programs is not the case.
Right.
So we're having all this conversation about nature preschools. At the same time, Richard Loeb's book came out in 2005. Mm-hmm. So there was even more discussion about kids outside and the importance to connect them to nature, not just as stewards, you know, and for environmental sustainability, but also for their whole child development.
Right.
So that led us to really, as the Nature Center, to really think about, like, do we want to pursue this preschool idea? And we were talking about expanding our visitor center. If we're going to do that, maybe now's the time to have the conversation. So we did some tours of the Midwest, but our Midwest preschool tour, as I call it, and visited several of those sites in Dodge, Tamarack Nature Center, which is just north of St. Paul, Schlitz Audubon in Milwaukee, and then Kalamazoo Nature Center. And then we decided, yeah, for sure, we're going to pilot this. We used an existing facility and started in the first year. We had 27 kids, and now we have 140 enrolled for the fall.
Whoa. So, amazing.
Yeah, it's changed a lot. So, and definitely, obviously, well received by the community.
That is so cool. How big is the community that you live in? How big is Midland?
Yeah, Midland has about 40,000 people.
Okay.
It's the corporate headquarters of Dow Chemical, now Dow Chemical DuPont, or Dow DuPont, I should say. Dow Chemical Corporation and Dow Corning Corporation. And so it's a small town, but, you know, a population that's very interested in obviously strong education for their kids. We have a really strong nature center, private nonprofit nature center, and arts facilities. And so it's kind of an interesting community. Lots of people coming and going from Midland because, you know, they may work somewhere else in the world and then come here. So that means we do have some dual language learners in our program. And we also have been really, from the very beginning, really wanted to serve all children in our community. Because of that population, we probably could have been a high-end kind of niche market program. But from the very beginning, we wanted to serve everyone. So we actually initially partnered with a local nonprofit and now have the grant ourselves through the state of Michigan for their Great Start Readiness Program, which some programs have, you know, Ready Fours or universal four-year-old program.
Right.
So it's not universal per se, but it is for at-risk four-year-old, essentially in the income bracket just above Head Start.
Okay.
Although income is not the only qualifier, but that's one qualifier. So about half of our kids are funded or receive some sort of assistance to attend, and funding either comes from that state program or we have some funding from the county for three-year-olds. And then we also, as a nature center, provide scholarships as well. So having that mix was really important to us. Yeah.
So, okay, backing up just a little bit. So when when it was like, okay, let's do this nature-based preschool at Chippewa Nature Center, how did you start? I mean, like, what was that process like for you? And, like, how did it go?
Right. Well, we started by visiting those other sites. I happened to also be working on my master's at the time. So part of my, well, not part of, my thesis project was related to the proposal of the preschool.
Which
worked out pretty nicely.
Yeah, definitely.
And
how
did you initially get funding to get it started?
So the Nature Center really believed that this was, I mean, as a organization believe this is important. So we contributed some operating dollars for the startup cost. But then we also received funding from a local foundation, the Herbert H. and Gracie Family Foundation. here in Midland, and they supported our tour that we went on, the Midwest tour, and some of the architecture plans. And then when it came time to build the building is really when the funding was critical to get outside support for it. Because in 2009, so I said, you know, in 2007, we started an existing building.
Okay.
But in 2009, we finished completion of a brand new LEED certified building with two classrooms. It's beautiful.
Wow.
And then we quickly outgrew it. And now we have those two rooms and we went back to the original space.
Oh,
so we now have three classrooms.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you're going to build a building, always build it bigger than you
bigger than you think it's going to need to be.
Right. And add more storage than you think you need.
Yes. Storage is huge. You need lots of storage for preschool programs.
For sure.
So, okay. So right now you've grown to 140 students. And how many teachers do you guys have?
Yeah, so we have three teachers in each classroom with a max of 18 kids.
Okay.
So we have nine teachers and then one office manager.
Okay.
And she subs as well as handles registration and snack purchasing and laundry, and she does everything. She's amazing and fills in all the other gaps.
Those people are, like, wonderful to have.
So important.
They?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
I've also heard that you have high schoolers that work with you.
What was that, high schoolers?
Yeah.
We will have high school, like, observers. There's some groups in town that have, like, their vocational ed classes.
Uh-huh.
They will come and observe as part of their classes. So we definitely have that. In the summertime, we have high schoolers that volunteer and work with our camp programs. So that's more regular. And then during the school year, they will observe as, you know, their observation hours. The same as university students. We have a lot of students that come and observe, which is great because I love to get them in kind of indoctrinated before they get into the traditional world.
I love that, too.
So true.
Have you had anybody come back and say, you've ruined me? I've had a college girl come back and say, like, I can never go public because you have ruined me, Kristen.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you're like, yes, I did my job.
Love it.
I do, too.
Yeah.
I do, too.
Right.
So
it's the same thing that, by the way, that same feeling is when after an open house, the families are leaving and the kids are crying because they don't want to leave your open house.
Yes.
And you're secretly like, yes.
Evil.
I never want to cry, you know, see a kid cry, but that's the time.
Okay, so I have met a couple of your teachers. We met them at UNCON, and they spoke so highly of you. And so for me, as a program director of a nature-based preschool, what's your magic that they're talking about? Like, how do you... I mean, that's one thing, like, for me as a director of a program, I struggle with wanting everybody to think that I'm this amazing person and love working for me. So, like, what's your kind of philosophy behind running your program? Like, how do they love you so much?
Well, I pay them.
That's
to
a loaded
say that.
Question.
Yeah. I pay them when they go to conferences. I give them like a bonus. They speak nice to me. So that helps.
I love it.
No, I think, first of all, some of it is simply the philosophy of our program.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I started this program and am passionate about this program because I believe in how it's done in the pedagogy, if you will. And so that's a lot of it, is that's what's most important and why we're doing what we're doing, and that it's about the kids and positive experiences and high quality early childhood and always pushing ourselves to think about things and question, and why do we do it that way, and should we be doing it that way, maybe we should be doing it this way. And so I think having the mission first is a big piece, because then it isn't about me. It isn't about them. It isn't, I mean, we've gotten a lot of great attention, and great, you know, media coverage and so forth. And yes, I've written a book, But that was really because we want more people to be doing this, right? More preschools to be doing what we do. And that's why we do professional development. And that's why I will go and speak places. And it isn't because, Rachel wants to have this fan base. Although it's kind of fun.
It is.
I will say, I was at a conference last week and this woman came up to me and hugged me and she was like, I just love you. And I'm thinking, I've never met you. But it was just very cool. But it was a little like, I don't know, it was a little outside my norm and comfort. I'm like, okay.
It means that your mission is working, right?
Right, exactly. And I think that's just it, is because people are excited about it because they get it, right? It's going back to what is important with childhood and like giving kids true play opportunities, those outdoor experiences, having outdoor time. It's really sickening to go to conferences and give presentations where people are like, yeah, we can't go outside because of X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. And they're crushed. They want to take their kids out. It's not like teachers are saying, no, I don't want my kids to have those experiences. But we've sort of become trapped in some ways by policies that sometimes don't really have any real purpose. How did that ever come to be? And then expectations of this readiness piece, we gotta get them ready for kindergarten. And what does that really mean? And that's, I will say, that's the hard part about our program, at least initially. Now parents do most of the explaining to other parents.
Yes.
People want to know, like, how are you going to teach my kid to be ready for kindergarten? How are you going to teach them their letters and numbers? And
we get that. My gosh. We get that every single time a parent walks in the doors. How are they going to learn? Well, so tell us what the process looks like when families come in then. I want to know what the process is.
Yeah, so we have open houses in January. So I don't know if you guys are like us, but registration starts crazy early.
So early. We were the last school because we did a March 1st this year. And everybody was like, well, I have to tell my school because it's January. Mm-hmm. Like if I'm going to go to this other school or not. Jeez.
Yeah, exactly. Which is always interesting when you are talking to parents of three-year-olds and you're saying, we'd really like them to have independent bathroom skills because we just aren't set up for diaper changing and, emergency situations. Oh, that happens, but that's different than every day. Parents freak out. They're like, but my kid's not ready. And I'm like, they're a third of their life is yet to happen before the start of school. Like, just relax. Because it's early. Definitely. So we have open houses in January and start registration in February.
Okay.
But at the open house, we first of all encourage everyone in the family to come. Like, everyone's welcome. I'm amazed at the number of programs that don't allow kids to come. That has never made sense to me. If we want to be child-centered, why wouldn't we let the kids come? I mean, yes, there are times like parent orientation. That's an adult-only event.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, kids are always welcome. So open house and get to see the classrooms, meet the teachers, see the play areas. Of course, tours and other times if they want to come and visit, that's fine as well. And then before school starts, we will have parent orientation in August. Then we have open houses for enrolled families.
Mm-hmm.
Just before the start of school, so the kids can come like a week or two before school starts and play and hang out and meet the teachers, who their actual teachers will be for sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then we do a home visit before the start of the school year. So in theory, a child will have met their classroom teacher at least twice before they come the first day, which helps really with that transition.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how
and
do you,
then,
oh, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, how do you educate families on your philosophy and that you're play-based and how, like, so that question that comes up, how are you going to get my child ready for kindergarten? At what point do you ask those questions or answer those questions?
First of all, our registration materials are pretty clear that this is our philosophy. This is what a typical day looks like. This is what we expect as far as dress, you know, how the children will be dressed. Of course, we have extra gear, tons of extra gear. Yes. If they don't have it or, you know, if it's a financial burden. But, you know, we outline that right from the get-go. Even our photos, like choose pictures of kids in their snowsuits in the snow, you know, covered in mud.
Yeah.
Just even those images, like they're not just this pristine, you know, inside in their prettiest outfit. Although we have had little girls wear their tutu over their rain suit with their mud boots, which is awesome. So you can be pretty and have your mud gear on at the same time. So I think that even just the written documents is important, that it right off the bat, this is what we believe in and how we're going to operate. And then when they come in, like in our hallway, we have pictures of kids, of course, covered in mud. And we even have a couple posters, one that says, will my child get muddy at nature preschool? Yes. And then there's kids just totally covered in mud and rolling down the hill. And, you know, will they get wet? Yes.
Totally.
So that they see it right off the bat, because I'm amazed the number of times, even our families, who after that written communication, open houses, parent orientation, the first rainy day, you're really going outside today? Really are. You know? So, you know, adults, it's not our norm. For most adults, it's not what's been typical.
Definitely.
So it takes them a while.
So can you...
So back to your question, though, of academics.
Yes.
That was the other thing. I mean, that's sort of the play piece. But we also have some handouts, like, here's how we teach math, here's how we teach reading, so forth. And then we will go through that as well at open house. There's lots of conversation about that. And so we give examples of, you know, hikes that we will do, that it's meaningful, like literacy that's meaningful to the child, which of course at 3 and 4 is their name and their family names, you know, friends, so forth. Signs we see on the trail, you know, we'll have stories out along the trail. Mm-hmm. We have one activity we love to do in the fall. When the kids sign in one day, they come in and their first letter of their name is just totally missing. And so now you have to call me Achel because my R is gone. And I don't know what happened. Yeah. And so the letters are actually out in the woods. And then we head out in the woods and find these letters.
That is so cool. I think I'm going to, can I have permission to use that?
Totally. Absolutely.
And I think Ifany wants to use that too.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's cool.
That's an example of here's literacy in action that's fun and playful and meaningful to that child.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay, so can you walk us through a typical day? Just what's a typical half day at Chippewa Nature Center Preschool?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, our programs are 3 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
We did for a stretch have a full day program. And we found our tuition-based families weren't interested in the full day, primarily because we didn't have wraparound care. If we'd had before and after school care, I think it would have been a no-brainer. But because we didn't, there wasn't interest in that. And we had waiting lists for half days. We went back to 3-hour days.
Okay.
And the day starts outside in one of the play areas. And they're natural playgrounds, so, you know, folks should not be picturing swings and climbers and things, but lots of natural and man-made loose parts throughout the play spaces.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about starting outside is they're dressed and ready to go. If someone's late, it doesn't disrupt the class, right? Definitely. If you're reading a story and someone comes in, it's like, oh, we all have to stop and say hi, you know?
Right.
But it doesn't disrupt. It just join play. And then also they're, for us, the most important part of the day is the outside time.
Right.
And so if we do that first, it doesn't get cut short.
Mm-hmm.
So we do that. And then we have, that's 45 minutes to an hour, depending on the weather, really. Most days it's, you know, comfortable and it's not soaking wet with, you know, rain or mud puddles, then it usually will go a full hour.
Okay.
And then we'll have a group meeting. And the group meeting will welcome everyone. We have a stage with benches around it, or we have a stump circle where everyone will sit together. We'll welcome everyone and who's missing. We use conscious discipline for behavior management. And so some of that is community building rituals of wishing people well who aren't there and so forth. Mm-hmm. So we'll go through that. And then we will head out on a hike. And so usually during group meeting, there's something that gets the kids excited about the hike or preps the hike. It could be a story or a song or just a mystery. And then we will leave the play area and head out. And those hikes may be very nature focused, like go to the meadow and look for insects or mm-hmm. go to the pond and look for frogs. Or they may be more literacy based. Like I said, the, the sign in if there's letters out in the woods. Exactly. We also do an animal rescue where the teachers, I think, take out all of their angst and anger on the world by scattering stuffed animals throughout the woods in these really precarious situations. So you'll find like a bear with a log on top of it or something. You're like, oh. But the kids take their sleds. It's usually winter time. They take their sleds out and those are the ambulances. And they'll take first aid kits and they'll go out and rescue these animals.
That's cute.
It's great fun. Yeah. So that's the hike. Fun. And then we'll come back inside. Come back inside, change into indoor shoes. So we keep all of our muddy gear in the hallway.
Okay.
And they change into clean indoor shoes. So in theory, the classrooms stay a little cleaner. And then have snack, which is served family style. And we use all real plates and silverware and cloth napkins and so forth. They're trying to really live that sustainability piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll have choice time in the classroom. And we use creative curriculum. So in the classroom, the interest areas all fit with creative curriculum, which is typical of probably most preschool classrooms, right? You have a library, toys and games, art, dramatic play, so forth. Everyone just calls them something slightly different.
Definitely.
And then there's a small group meeting after choice time. There's a small group with 6 kids and a teacher. And that's, 10 to 15 minutes on a really focused activity.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one last large group meeting and that's the day. So it goes fast.
I was going to say, you do all that in 3 hours?
Yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's a lot.
That's amazing.
So about half the day is outside. Now, I should add, though, on nice weather days, if the weather's, pleasant and it's comfortable to be outside and the kids are doing well, we'll be outside all day. And we'll just go back, either have snack inside and go back out or have snack outside and then stay out for the afternoon choice time.
That's really cool. Wow. So Tiffany, you had something.
I did. Well, now that we're a ways into our episode here, I figured I would ask you the question that got us talking to you initially. We put out a call to action in one of our previous episodes, which Steve from Michigan replied to. The call to action was, if you know anyone who is working within the system of education to make it better by being a part of the system, let us know. And he said, you have to talk to Rachel.
Yes.
So with that being said, what are you doing within the system to fight to change it?
Yeah, well, first of all, the most important thing is being a high quality model ourselves,
mm-hmm.
Having a high quality program. But then, once we kind of got that under control and felt like we had things, you don't want to start telling other people what to do when you don't do it yourself. So then we started doing a lot of conference presentations. I do a lot of professional development for different organizations, whether those are conferences or like Head Start groups will have me come in and, do a training on a Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So helping people, and through that, we're helping people to move towards nature-based. So I talk about nature-based preschools as being this overlap between high-quality early childhood and high-quality environmental education.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those things need to be there and present to really be a true nature-based preschool. But there's a continuum of getting there, right? Just because a preschool isn't fully nature-based, they're not outside half the day, they don't leave the play area, that doesn't mean they can't integrate nature into their program. And so my work with professional development has really been how to help people start doing more.
Right.
So for a lot of people, that starts with inside. How can I bring some natural materials inside? Mm-hmm. And I know I listened to your podcast you guys had on, you know, things you can bring inside, living and non-living. That was great fun.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
So, you know, and that's great. And that's for some people, that's the starting point. And mm-hmm. then moving towards, okay, how can we bring it even into our small group activities, for example, or the kinds of materials we're reading or, you know, books we're reading. And then how can we start doing more nature in our play area? So we start moving away from traditional playground equipment.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. more loose parts and allowing kids to get dirty. And, you know, and for some programs that, going to take a long time to make that change. Others maybe not,
right?
But you know, helping them to make that move. And then what would be really great is then when programs start to leave the play area, whether that's on site or that's going somewhere nearby, if mm-hmm. that's going to a nature center, maybe it's once a month or once a quarter even to start with, and building a relationship with a place outside the play area, or as what Claire Warden calls the beyond. With the space beyond the play area.
I love that.
Yeah. And so, you know, if that's how we define nature-based preschools, is this half their day and those three spaces, and then integrating nature into the curriculum and the teaching practices as well, it's really how do we help traditional preschools move towards that? Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't, when they first started, nature-based preschools were at nature centers. And, mm-hmm. you know, Kristen, when you read my book, I made several points of, hey, this doesn't have to be at a nature center.
Yes, yes.
That's very limiting. We have lots of preschools mm-hmm. all over the world, and most of them are not at a nature center.
Definitely.
So.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are dying to know where Rachel Larimore is headed next.
Yeah, so big changes. So the other thing I've been working on, as well as professional development, has been research as well.
Uh-huh.
And I've been working with David Sobel and his team, Rachel Becker-Klein from Peer Associates, and really looking at outcomes of nature-based preschools.
Okay.
Is there a difference?
Right.
The most important thing is hopefully there isn't a negative impact, right?
Mm-hmm. Which, yeah.
Yeah, I doubt it.
I doubt, yep.
But then also like, hey, is there a positive impact? Beyond traditional programs. So I've been working with them. And then at the same time, also 2 years ago, started working on my doctorate at Michigan State, specifically looking at nature-based early childhood. And so just a couple months ago, I have made the decision and officially announced that in July, I will actually be leaving the Nature Center and going to work full-time on my PhD in curriculum instruction and teacher education.
Wow.
With the focus of nature-based early childhood, though.
Very, very cool.
Yeah. Cool and, like, also really kind of, I mean, it's bittersweet, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to leave, but I will very much still be connected to the center and working with them. And yeah, I really believe that we need more research related to this approach.
We
you
do.
Know, we have this growing movement. I mean, they're... Every time I turn around, there's another nature preschool starting or forest kindergartens, you know, and that's a whole nother debate of what's the difference, but ultimately it comes down to time outside is probably the biggest difference.
Right.
But there's all these programs popping up. And first of all, I think it's really important that we make sure they're high quality programs and that we're encouraging people to do best practices of early childhood as well as the nature piece.
Yes.
But then also documenting what is the difference? Is there a difference? Maybe there's not. But I would find that pretty hard to believe.
Yeah.
And then talking to kindergarten teachers and parents and so forth.
I always get hung up on, well, we can see that there's a difference, but what is it that measures that difference?
Exactly.
That's where my brain gets
right.
stuck.
So you're going to do all that work for us then, Rachel.
Excellent.
Right.
Keep us posted.
Dr. Larimore.
Yeah. Right.
All right. We
I'll
are ready.
Right on that.
Are we ready for our...
Oh, no.
We're not
because
ready for
I
what
have
would you do?
Two questions that I am required to ask you before our what would you do.
Okay.
Okay.
Every time nature preschool comes up, and is talked about at my school. These two questions happen every single time. Number one, where do you go to the bathroom?
Mm. Yep.
And number two, what do you do with that whiny kid who is always too cold no matter what?
Mm, good. Let's see what Rachel says.
So where do you go to the bathroom? What they're really asking is when you're out on the hike and some kid needs to go to the bathroom,
yes.
you let him go in the woods.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the question is, especially if it's number one, of course, and there's trees and, you know, learning how to go to the bathroom in the woods is actually a very valuable skill.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. So for sure. Now, I will say we do remind kids we're getting ready to go on a hike. Does anyone need to go to the bathroom?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, that's part of our routine. Mm-hmm. So you try to minimize those.
Yeah.
And for some kids, it can become a novelty. So you don't want to do that either, where there's like, hey, I need to go suddenly. So, yeah. Now, if it's beyond that, if it's a two, we usually head back to the building. We're very rarely that far from the building that you can't make it back. Now, I know there are other programs. Like, I visited, I mentioned earlier, Claire Warden. Her program in Scotland, Aquilone Nature Kindergarten, they have a space off in the woods, and they have actually established a little fit toilet space as the kids, because they're out much longer than our kids are for that beyond portion, and so they have that access. We also have porta potties, but we also have outhouses out along the property in different places, so if we're really far away, there's usually a bathroom close. So, but yeah, are we opposed to peeing in the woods? No, not at all.
Right.
Yeah.
What about
it's a good skill.
What about the child that's always too cold?
The child that's always too cold. Okay. There are some kids, like we had one little girl that was tiny. Like there's nothing to her. And she just could not get her body warm to begin with.
Yeah.
Like it just had a hard time getting it started. So we would actually throw her gloves and hat in the dryer before class and then give them to her warm. We also take heat packs in our, we always have a trail bag, and we take those little hand warmer heat packs with us. So if a kid's really struggling, hold on to that and warm up their hands. And usually it's hands and toes, if they get water in their boots. And then extra layers. And you know the kid, like, if they're just never really warm enough, having extra layers for them. And sometimes that's because parents don't have enough clothing for them. Mm-hmm. And that's where you designate, this is a coat for this kid, that they, when they come to school, they can put it on in addition to whatever else they have.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm just thinking, like, the weather... the wet times, the wet, cold times, like right now, are really the hardest times of the year. So we do a lot of just keeping eye on kids. And when they start mumbling what I call the umbles, right, which is wilderness people have talked about for years, that's when hypothermia sets in, when they're grumbling and mumbling stumbling.
The umbles.
Then the umbles, yeah.
Probably go inside, yeah.
Right, exactly. We need a break. And we're not that hardcore. Like, that's one thing I'm amazed that people think we're like, go, you will hike, We're not that hardcore. If kids are miserable, go inside.
Yeah.
Because ultimately we want it to be a positive outdoor experience.
Exactly.
So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Are you ready?
We're ready for what would you do?
My gosh. Okay.
Are you ready?
I think so. Okay. I'm really nervous about what this question's going to be.
Okay.
All right. Well, what would you do? We always have to sing our little song.
You have been given the magical power of a copy-paste button. You have the ability to copy and paste your favorite place and paste it onto your school. What place do you pick and why?
Ooh.
Oh.
You're so good at this, Tiffany.
Interesting. Okay.
Take a second. Think about your favorite place. You can take a second.
Yeah.
So my favorite, well, my personal favorite place is my family's property in Central Illinois. We have more along the river, and we have more hills, which I would probably pace the hills, because Midland is this really odd place in Michigan in that we're in the Saginaw Valley, and they're just, it's pretty flat. Where the rest of Michigan has lovely rolling hills, and Midland doesn't. So I would pick, copy and paste some of the hills from there. But otherwise, we have the same woods. We have the same open areas. Very similar. I mean, there's obviously a little difference. But the other thing that I would copy and paste, and we have always had, like, geography envy, or I don't know, whatever you want to call it, natural resource envy, is Schlitz Audubon Center on Lake Michigan. They get these snow canoes where the lake, you have to Google it. Get their pictures on their
snow cano.
So the water comes up in the wintertime and makes these like volcano looking mounds. And I know. And I've never experienced them, and I want to go and experience it, and then I want them here. So every time I see their pictures, I'm like, I want that.
Snowcano.
So that was the first thing that actually came to mind. And that's not because it's my favorite place, but I have a little bit of, you know, envy that they get.
I like that natural resource envy.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, natural resource envy. Totally.
I love it. Well,
Rachel,
we so appreciate you taking time to be on Q&A with T and Kate. We had a lot of fun talking to you. We want to wish you luck for your next stage in life. And if we're still podcasting in a few years, we'll touch back. Yeah, we'll touch base with you and see
when you're a doctor, Rachel.
Right.
Right. You can still call me Rachel.
Okay. Oh, okay. Thank you.
The teachers have been giving me a hard time about that. They're like, we're not going to call you doctor.
I love it. All right. Well, Tiffany.
Well, Kristen and Rachel.
It's been fun.
See you next time on Q&A with T&K.
This has been Q&A with T and K. Thank you for listening. From serious to silly, Tiffany and Kristen are eager to answer your questions. Just email them to q4tnk@gmail.com. That's q4tandk@gmail.com. We'll be back next week with another episode. Music by Kurt Pearsall, Tiffany's sweet, sweet hubby.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production. Hey, you want to support all the Upstairs Studio podcasts? It's as simple as this. Use our Amazon link when you shop Amazon. We get a small percentage of what you spend. You don't pay any extra. You get your stuff from Amazon. Everybody wins. Where do you find the link? Well, it's on the Explorations Early Learning app. You can find it on the Explorations Early Learning website. And if you don't find it in those places, just get a hold of Jeff on Facebook or via email, and he'll hand deliver it to your inbox. Thanks for your support. Bye-bye.